all of whom oppressed within the lands.
فَأَكْثَرُوا فِيهَا الْفَسَادِ
and increased therein the corruption.
فَصَبَّ عَلَيْهِمْ رَبُّكَ سَوْطَ عَذَابِ
So your Lord poured upon them a scourge of punishment.
إِنَّ رَبَّكَ لَبِالْمِرْصَادِ
Indeed, your Lord is in observation.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
These verses, I mean verses 6 to 14 of chapter Al-Fajr, contain some meaningful oath about the punishment of the transgressors, of which a few powerful ancient nations are referred to, each of which had great authority in their own right, but were arrogant and went astray. They did not believe and disobeyed Allah, and these verses illustrate their painful destiny to show the pagans of Mecca and other similar nations, who were probably much weaker than them, to understand their own status and awaken them from their neglectful sleep. Again and again, we should look, care, and notice about the role of women in Karbala. Today, this is our duty. When the women and children were being paraded as prisoners through the cities, the government's purpose was to hold them up as an example to those who would dare oppose Yazid. They were meant to be a warning to others of the humiliation and punishment that would be meted out to resistors. But Yazid's purpose was thwarted. The fourth Imam, Lady Zainab, and the group of women used their trials and tribulations to awaken the Muslim community from its indifference to evil and matters of leadership.
Sheikh Azhar Nasser.
The reason why we know what happened is because of the incredible patience of those women. The reason why we know what happened is because those women made sure that every movement that happened on that day was forever etched in their memory. So tonight, my dear brothers and sisters, I want to speak a little bit about the individual women who made this revolution happen. So the women who surrounded Imam al-Hussein, they played a pivotal role in telling the world, delivering the message of what Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam wanted to achieve. Now oftentimes we think that that's all the women did. They gave those sermons, and that's about it. They just told the masses about what happened. But their presence was even deeper than that. You know, my dear brothers and sisters, women can be some of the most powerful motivators. As a man, if another man tells you to man up, to step up, that's going to give you a little bit of a boost. But if your women folk tell you, man up, it has a different effect.
On the month of Muharram and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his family and companions, be with today's special. Every day from IRIB English Radio. People rise up and mourn. It is Ashura. See the struggle of Hussein in the Kabbalah. Today and in this part, again, we'll look at Lady Zainab's character. She is an icon and a role model for all of us. The greatness of Zainab al-Kubra's movement is reflected in her remaining sermons. She spoke in a similar tone as her father when he was delivering a speech to his people during his leadership. She spoke using the same kind of words Imam Ali would use. She was equally eloquent and precise, and her words were equally profound. We listen to a part of it. O plotters and pretenders, maybe you yourselves were starting to believe that you were following Islam and the Holy Prophet's household, but you failed miserably in the test. You proved to be blind in the sedition and fitna. Do you pledge allegiance while you are planning a conspiracy? You can do nothing but engage in shifting allegiance, hypocrisy, flattery, self-humiliation, and empty talk. Your action were different from your words. During this month, the month of Muharram, you can see the commemoration of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, in a form of azadari or mourning gatherings. Until the time of Ghaybat al-Kubra or major occultation of our last Imam, Imam Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance, we find that our imams always encourage Azai Hussein. They sign Azai Hussein not only a demonstration of grief for Imam al-Hussein and the martyrdoms of Karbala, but also a renewal of one's commitment to Allah and His laws as expounded in the Holy Quran and Ahadith. We have records of the sayings of the representatives during Ghaybat al-Sughra or minor occultation of Imam Mahdi, peace be upon him, explaining and encouraging Azai Hussein. Mourning gatherings, mourning moments for Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. From 329 AH onwards, the ulamas took it upon themselves to perpetuate the message of Karbala. Sheikh al-Saduq was the first scholar to have introduced prose as medium of conveying the message of Imam al-Hussein. His speeches have been preserved, and to this they are known as the Amali, or dictations of Sheikh Saduq.
And therefore, one of the most important roles that the women played in Karbala and in other cities is that they raised the morale of those men who wanted to support Imam al-Hussein. If they saw any weakness, they gave them that feminine nudge, just like Dulhem did when Zuhair ibn al-Qayn was unsure about whether to join Hussein. She didn't need to act like a man, because femininity is not a weakness. All she had to do was look at him and say, Zuhair, the grandson of the prophet calls you and you don't respond. 10 men could have lectured him about joining Hussein, but all it took was his wife to nudge him for him to join Abi Abdullah and write his name on the list of Shuhada of Karbala. That's power. That's a lot of power, dear brothers and sisters. Raising the morale. Some of the women had so much love for Imam al-Hussein that they actually participated in the battle. One woman was so overcome by what she was witnessing that she lost herself in that moment and entered the battlefield. And we'll speak about what Imam al-Hussein said to her.
We ask you, dear brother and sister, to remember us in your prayer, the light moments with your Lord. Thank you very much, and may Allah accept all your good deeds and azadaris and mourning gatherings for Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. Peace be upon him. Thank you for listening to today's special, and fi amanillah.
Patient and longing to meet my beloved, my steps quicken, my heartbeat tracing. I long to touch each inch as I pass, hoping to absorb his light into my heart. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Standing humbly at your green dome, I'm full of sins, I'm full of shame. I feel adorned by your beauty, giving my tears in plea, forgive me. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. To the ground, all is calm. Now I feel at peace. No sound amongst these millions, only I can hear.
the streets of my Rasul. He is my love, please let me be. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city. Ya Muhammad, Ya Habibi, you are the light of this blessed city.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salam and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. Dear brothers and sisters, God bless your tears in this month for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And are you ready to listen to a hadith from Imam Hussein alayhi salam himself about crying for him? He says, I am the martyr of tears. No believer remembers me except that they cry. So why do we cry for Hussein alayhi salam? Why does every heart tremble at the name Karbala? Is it just history? Just tragedy? No. It's something deeper, something planted in the soul of every believer. Because Hussein is not just remembered, Hussein is felt. Hussein is not just remembered, Hussein is felt. The Arabic word abara or abara doesn't just mean a tear. It refers to a tear that carries meaning, memory, and movement of the heart. So when Hussein alayhi salam says, Ana qatil al-abara, I am the martyr of the tear, he's not asking for your sadness. He's describing a reality. If your faith is alive, if your heart still beats for truth, you cannot hear his name without your eyes responding. That's a very beautiful connection, huh? Science shows us that emotional tears are different. They release stress hormones, regulate emotions, and trigger a biochemical response of relief and connection. According to studies published in Psychology Today and Harvard Medical School, crying is one of the body's ways of processing deep moral emotions. Now ask yourself, what emotion runs deeper than watching a man stand in front of thousands of swords for the sake of God, dignity, and truth? Hussein's sacrifice breaks you, but in that breaking, you remember who you are. Who you are. Who you are. Let's be clear. The tears of Muharram are not just grief, they are awakening. When you cry for Hussein, you are saying, I still know the difference between justice and tyranny. I still feel the pain of the Prophet's family. I still carry the weight of what happened in Karbala. So these tears don't weaken you. They clean you. They align you with the values of the Ahlul Bayt, and they tell the world, we are still with Hussein. We are still with Hussein. With truth, with divine beauty. Imam Rida alayhi salam said, whoever remembers our tragedy and weeps, even the size of a fly's wing, paradise becomes guaranteed. because those tears are proof that your heart is still alive. And the heart that cries for Hussein as-salam can never support injustice. It can never forget the Prophet. It can never become numb. So if you cried for Hussein as-salam even once, know this, you have fulfilled the Prophet's hope. You've joined the prayer of the angels and you've answered Hussein's alayhi salam call. Because Hussein is not just a memory, he is the pulse of this ummah. Every tear is proof that we are still his. Inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
May peace, blessings, and mercy from God be with you. When discussing Iran in the context of the war in June 2025, it's essential to highlight two individuals who played a key role in enhancing the chances of success for the Axis and in bringing closer the dream of liberating Palestine, the martyr Qasem Soleimani and the martyr Saeed Izadi, also known as Hajj Ramadan. General Soleimani, the former commander of the Quds Force, was the true architect behind the evolution of the resistance axis. He transformed what was once a simple defensive alliance of forces in the region into a concrete project aimed at besieging Israel and challenging American supremacy in our countries. Soleimani played a crucial role in reinforcing the two central ideas of the axis strategy. His involvement in organizing the arms routes for the resistance in Palestine is significant and well documented by numerous statements from Palestine and Lebanese leaders. Additionally, Hajj Qasem led the mission to combat Daesh in Iraq and Syria. In doing so, he eliminated the most lethal American grip, which aimed to dismantle societies and pit forces against those who opposed hegemony and occupation in endless battles. This would allow Israel to expand discreetly and enable the United States to maintain its dominance without disruptions. By defeating Daesh, Soleimani, in collaboration with Iraqi, Syrian, and Lebanese forces, helped to strengthen the umbrella that protected the Palestinian resistance and establish a balance against the dominant American power. In all these events, the media outlets of the normalizing regimes, whether Saudi, Emirati, or Qatari, were at the forefront. They promoted the term Iranian project as an initiative aimed at occupying Arab territories and perpetrating sectarian massacres. The aim of this campaign was to create a link between the Zionist project and the so-called Iranian project, as they defined it. Their direct message to the Arab audience was, as an Arab, what is your issue with the Zionist project? It occupies territories. If that's the case, then this Iranian project also occupies four Arab capitals. And if your concern is that American hegemony imposes a lifestyle on you and erases your identity and existence, then this Iranian project turns Arab peoples into Persians, magicians, and fire worshippers. This is how media controlled by normalizing regimes instill this idea in the minds of their followers. The goal was to create a demon that was equal to and even worse than the one already known to Arabs and Muslims, Israel. In the face of a supposedly worse demon than Israel, it becomes normalized and natural to ally with the lesser demon, meaning Israel, or at least to collaborate with it to combat the Iranian project. It becomes quite common and natural to view oneself, at best, as neutral and to pray. It becomes quite common and natural to view oneself, at best, as neutral and to pray, "Oh God, punish the oppressors with the oppressors." This distortion of consciousness, which occurred and continues to occur under the guise of the Iranian project, is the reason why many people were left shocked after the Zionist Western aggression against Iran in June 2025, particularly following the harsh and destructive Iranian responses to the Israeli entity. However, this shock, even today, has not managed to overcome the vast amount of falsehoods and lies that have been spread about leaders of the Axis of Resistance as a whole, and specifically about the Iranian leaders. When an Arab observer sees that an Iranian general named Abbas Nilfurushan was martyred in Beirut alongside Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah and other martyrs, or that an Iranian Islamic leader named Qasem Soleimani was treacherously killed by the United States in Baghdad along with Iraqi leader Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis and several of his companions, or that an Iranian Islamic leader named Mohammad Reza Zahidi was martyred in the Israeli attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus in 2024, the media promoting the normalization of relations with Israel convinces this Arab observer to regard these matters as marginal and insignificant details. The aim is to persuade the Arab observer that the presence and influence of these leaders actually serve as proof of an alleged Iranian occupation of Arab capitals. It is both paradoxical and sorrowful that the actions of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps of Iran across all areas of the resistance axis have been supported and even led by the country's own population. However, the media of the normalizing regimes continue to try to convince the observer that as an Arab, it's impossible to act independently. They want to instill the belief that it is unfeasible to work on a project for the liberation of Palestine or to form alliances based on this aspiration. Instead, one must believe that they are merely a tool serving what they call the Iranian project. Even when the Al-Qassam brigades carried out the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood, the primary and most prominent accusation was aimed at Iran, claiming that Hamas's actions were intended to further the Iranian agenda. Similarly, during the July 2006 war, some in Lebanon, aligned with the normalizing regimes, believed that the war was waged by the Lebanese resistance solely as a result of the nuclear negotiations between Iran and the West. To uncover the truth behind the Iranian project, it's crucial to discuss a second key figure, Mohammad Said Izadi, or Haj Ramadan, who was assassinated by Israel during the aggression against Iran in June 2025. According to published reports, his official obituary and statements from the Palestinian resistance, especially from the Al-Qassam brigades, indicated that he was the head of the Palestinian file in the Quds force of the IRGC. This man, whose real name and detailed role we learned after his assassination, is testified by all leaders and members of the Palestinian factions. In 1992, he traveled to Lebanon, to the Marj al-Zahur region in the southeast, to meet with Palestinian leaders who had been deported by the occupation. Haj Ramadan's meeting with Palestinian officials conveyed a singular message. the absolute commitment of Iran, and particularly the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, to support the will of the Palestinian people. According to the testimonies from leaders of Palestinian factions and Israel's own accusations against Haj Ramadan, this man was responsible for financing, arming, and training members of the Palestinian resistance. He personally oversaw the development of smuggling networks for weapons and money into Palestine. The promise that Haj Ramadan made in 1992 to a group of exiled leaders from movements that barely had individual weapons was fulfilled over 33 years. Thus, the Palestinian factions transformed into a regional force capable of attacking Tel Aviv and executing operations on the scale of the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. The story of Haj Ramadan, along with other unknown narratives and details that have yet to be disclosed to the media, confirms one thing. The Iranian project is both real and existent. However, contrary to what the normalizing regime's media claim, this is a revolutionary initiative aimed at breaking the American hegemony over our nation. Its goal is to enhance our chances, those of the people in this region, the Arabs, to liberate our land and regain sovereignty over our resources and wealth. For this reason, the U.S. Zionist war against Iran in June 2025 was unavoidable. The Iranian nuclear project appeared to be the main driver of this war, but its primary goal was and continues to be to undermine the foundations of the Resistance Axis project. Essentially, it aims to dismantle Iran's initiative to support the Arab liberation movement, thereby strengthening the existing siege against the resistance forces in Palestine, Lebanon, and throughout the region. What the United States and Israel desire is an Iran that functions as an agent and the tool of the West, just as it did during the Shah's era, when normalizing regimes not only accepted it, but were also subservient to it. What the West and Israel demand from Iran is for it to weaken and exhaust itself, raising the flag of surrender. At this moment, that would mean denying Palestine, abandoning the resistance project, and isolating itself within its own borders. For this reason, we can understand the current war against Iran primarily from a civilizational perspective. It is a war between a brutal force that believes it has the right to bomb nuclear facilities and endanger the lives of millions, including the citizens that are subordinate to the governments, and a force that stands up for its right to be a rival to the West and to uphold sovereignty over its resources and the energy of its people. The war is fought between a barbaric model willing to burn and destroy a country filled with cultural treasures, as seen in Iraq, Syria, and throughout all of our nations, and a society stubbornly rooted in history, unwilling to give up its status as a noble nation, deserving of respect and not begging for life from the arrogant West. One of the most striking events that emerged following the escalation of U.S. Zionist aggression against Iran was the spread of tweets from the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, in English, addressing social and philosophical issues. The significant admiration these tweets garnered from the Western public, including those in the United States, encapsulates part of the civilizational aspect of the current war. This is a struggle between a brutal force rooted in ignorance, slavery, exploitation, and genocide, and a force that seeks liberation while insisting on upholding its moral and ethical principles. Showcasing a revolutionary experience that refuses to submit to hegemony and arrogance. The war against the Iranian project signifies a turning point between two eras, one of total submission to hegemony and another of renewed momentum for the liberation project. This happens despite all the sacrifices and blows our peoples have endured since 1948 and since World War I, particularly concentrated in the last 2 years, namely after the Operation Al-Aqsa Flood. We, the peoples of the region and all the free nations of the world, will gain immensely from the strength and victory of Iran. It'll be a joy as great as that which filled the hearts and cheers of the people of Gaza with every barrage of rockets fired at the positions of the Israeli occupation. The Iranian Project, the title of our episode today, can be summarized with the words written by the martyr Mostafa Chamran in his memoirs. I lived a comfortable life in the United States and had all the opportunities, but I divorced myself from pleasures. I traveled to southern Lebanon, where I live among the needy and oppressed, experiencing their poverty and hardships, and opening my heart to the pain and concerns of these unfortunate people. I always wanted to confront the threat of death under Israeli bombs. The Iranian Project is also encapsulated in a tweet from the account of the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Amidst the intense barbaric bombings against Iran and at the peak of the threat to the Iranian state structure itself, as well as the personal threat to the leader Ayatollah Khamenei, he declared on June 21, 2025, "The Palestinian cause is essential to us, and the victory of Palestine is unavoidable." See you next week, God willing.
Every night till the day. باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
فدعوتك ربي بقرآن جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآن.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. May the peace and blessings of Allah be upon the soul of Prophet Muhammad and his purified progeny. Dear audience, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another episode of the program Let's Recite the Quran, coming to you from the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. I'm your host Mahdi, and as always, we are joined by Quran expert, dear brother Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam, brother Mahdi, and Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of this program. I'm really glad to be with you, as always.
Thank you, brother. Well, dear audience, as you may know, the program Let's Recite the Quran consists of several Quranic parts. First, we're going to talk about the famous Quran reciter. Then we're going to listen to a recitation by that reciter. And after it, Brother Muhammad will analyze that recitation. So please stay tuned. Today we are going to listen to a recitation by Sheikh Abul Ainain Shu'aisha, an Egyptian reciter who was born in 1922. He learned Quran recitation at the age of 7, and his first teacher was his father, Ahmad Shu'aisha. This prominent master of Quran recitation, who followed the style of Sheikh Muhammad Rif'at, entered Egyptian radio at the age of 17, and at that moment, he was the youngest Quran reciter on the radio. He had a warm voice and precisely pronounced each and every word and letter. Sheikh Abul Ainain Shu'aisha traveled to many Muslim and non-Muslim countries, including France, England, Turkey, Jordan, Syria, Kuwait, and of course Islamic Republic of Iran to recite the verses of the Noble Quran. He was the chairman of the jury panel in Islamic Republic of Iran's 15th International Quran Competition in 1998. He believed that Iranian reciters ranked second after Egyptians, and that these two countries have the most number of reciters in the Muslim world. He said, "This great Quranic movement in Iran is indebted to the Islamic Revolution, and I hadn't seen such enthusiasm towards the Noble Quran before the revolution." This prominent master of Quran recitation passed away in 2011 at the age of 89. May Allah bless him. Dear audience, now let's listen to the recitation of Surah At-Tin, recited by Sheikh Abul Ainain Shu'aisha, preceded by its English translation. Let's enjoy it.
In the name of Allah, the absolutely merciful, the especially merciful, by the fig and the olive, by Mount Sinai, and by this city of security. Verily, we created man of the best stature. Then we reduced him to the lowest of the low. Except those who believe and do righteous deeds, then they shall have a reward without end.
وَالتِّينِ وَالزَّيْتُونِ وَالطُّورِ سِينِينَ
Dear friends, you're listening to the program Let's Recite the Quran, and what you just listened to was recitation of verses 1 to 6 of Surah At-Tin, recited by Sheikh Abu Al-Ainain Shu'aisha. And now, Brother Muhammad, let's talk about this beautiful recitation.
Sure. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This recitation by Sheikh Abu Al-Ainain Shu'aisha, he used Maqam Rast in the entire recitation. And about Maqam Rast, it's one of the major, and in fact, one of the main maqamat of the Quran, which are used in the Quran. And whenever you're using Maqam Rast, the feeling that you have is it's a very powerful maqam. Rast means upright. Yeah. Rast. It comes from the Persian word Rast, which means upright, and it could also mean
strength.
Rast, it could also come from Rastigar in Persian, which means
true.
Prosperous. Okay. Anyway, it's a very powerful maqam, and it's a very pleasurable maqam to listen to. It's one of the main maqams, like I said, in among the maqamat of Quran recitation. And all reciters use this maqam in their recitation without any exception.
And as far as I remember, you said that it might be straight or truth.
Yeah, that's right. And yes, that's right. It's a very, it's used most, they say this, okay, this is very subjective. It's not something, it's not absolute. They say that use this maqam when you are reciting verses that are very true, that mm-hmm. has a lot of truth in them.
Uh-huh.
And you are actually, you're stating a truth. But this is subjective, okay? You could use it in other places as well. And Maqam Rast is known as Abun Nagamat, the father of Maqamat. And just like I said, all reciters have used this maqam. You can't find one reciter who hasn't used Maqam Rast in his mm-hmm. recitation. Just like Maqam Bayati, which is another main maqam, known as Ummun Nagamat.
The mother of yeah. Maqamat.
Yes. Okay, and Sheikh Shu'aisha, he recites all three registers, the Qarar, the Jawab, and Jawab al-Jawab.
That is the highest register.
Yes. So, and let's just go ahead and talk about the Tajweed, okay? Because we don't have too much time.
And sorry, by Jawab al-Jawab means, we mean the highest register of the reciter's voice. Am I right?
Yes, yes. We have the Qarar, for example. أَعُوذُ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ. This would be Qarar. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. This would be Jawab. See, this is Qarar. This is Jawab. And Jawab al-Jawab would be even higher than this. See, it's eight notes,
yeah.
right? It's an octave, which consists of eight notes. The second octave, another eight notes, if you go higher eight notes, that would be Jawab al-Jawab.
Now let's talk about
Tajweed points. وَالتِّينِ وَالزَّيْتُونِ وَالطُّورِ سِينِينَ. The word ta, excuse me, the word tur has the letter ta at the beginning. Ta is a very
strong letter.
It's the strongest letter in the Arabic language in terms of the manner of articulation.
Mm-hmm.
And also the place of articulation. It's a plosive. It's, it's a stop, oral stop, because you completely obstruct the airflow in the mouth,
the
and then you release it like an explosion. You release it suddenly. And it has some other strong characteristics.
It is voiced.
It's voiced. It has isti'la, mm-hmm. which means the root of the tongue is raised. You have to raise the root of the tongue while
pronouncing ta.
It has itbaq, mm-hmm. which means the body of the tongue also takes the shape of the roof of the mouth. Ta. Ta. And it has qalqala, which means jahr and shidda. And that's it. These characteristics of ta make it the strongest letter in terms of pronunciation.
Jahr, so here we have,
jahr means it's voiced.
And shidda means plosive.
Yeah, shidda means it's a plosive. Waturi sinin. You have to make sure that the ta is pronounced correctly. The place of articulation of ta is just like ta, except ta has tafkhim. The mouth opens vertically.
Yeah.
Whenever it's pronounced with a fatha or alif ul mad.
And the root of the tongue is raised.
Yes.
Plus the body, of course.
Yes, of course. وَهَذَا الْبَلَدِ الْأَمِينِ. In this verse, we had all the letters were letters of istifad. All of the letters should be pronounced with tarqiq in this verse. Just like the first verse, وَالتِّينِ وَالزَّيْتُونِ. We didn't have any letter of isti'la.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad, and thank you, dear audience of IRIB English Radio. That was the final part of the program, Let's Recite the Quran. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. And don't forget to visit our website, that is parstoday.com. Please click on the tab Call of Islam, and there you can listen to this program as well as other programs of this radio. Until next time, we'll leave you in Allah's care. Have a nice time and goodbye.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياة هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن ضياء يملأ الآفاق ونور يبعث الأشواق وفيه محاسن الأخلاق
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are here to walk with you through what's coming up in the next hour. That's plenty ahead, so stay with us as we continue this thoughtful and engaging journey together. Coming up in just a moment is Like Muhammad, a reflective program that explores the life and exemplary character of Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him and his progeny. Through this segment, we'll delve into the spiritual, social, moral, political, and educational dimensions of his legacy, drawing timeless wisdom from his noble path. After that, we shift our focus to the region with Midstream. This in-depth program offers clear and balanced analysis of key developments across West Asia, providing context and insight into the critical events shaping our world today. Later in the hour, stay tuned for The Last Savior. In this segment, Dr. Ali Ghanavati engaged in a rich discussion on the cultation of Imam of the Age,